John Culp here in Lafayette, Louisiana, and I've been doing a series of interviews for Hacker Public Radio. Started with my dad, which we released not on Father's Day, but very close to Father's Day. Then I did one with Jezra about Blather, and then a conversation with NY Bill when we were visiting New York a couple weeks ago. And today I have another very special guest right here. It's my son. Hey, buddy.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going well, thank you.
All right, so this is Hacker Public Radio, and so I'm curious as to what, how would you define a hacker? What's a hacker?
A person who changes something to suit their personal needs.
Yeah, so it's not an evil person who like logs into servers without authorization and steals stuff?
Not necessarily.
Okay. How about in the books you read and the shows you watch and stuff, how do they normally portray hackers there?
Hackers are people who go into systems without permission to do something.
What do they normally do?
They normally erase something, download something. They deal with some sort of data that they shouldn't have.
Yeah. Okay. But you have a different view of what hacking can be, correct?
Yes.
Now, why is that?
Because I am a hacker, and I honestly do not know how to illegally log on to a server.
Nor do I. I consider myself a hacker as well, but I have no idea how to crack into things. Sometimes the people in the hacking community like to distinguish between hackers and crackers. The crackers being the bad guys, and the hackers being the ones that are fighting for good. So, what is something that you do as a hacker?
Well, I cook, which is a grit, which can easily be defined by hacking because you adapt in almost every recipe that you make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've often thought that my mom is a great hacker. She's an excellent cook. She can make anything out of anything, for one thing. But, yeah, when you're cooking, you're almost always going to modify it a little bit to suit your tastes, and that's definitely a kind of hacking. Now, you don't like to take stuff apart, do you?
I love taking stuff apart.
What?
What
good does that do, to take something apart?
One, it's something to do, and two, I can see all the guts in it.
Yeah? And what do you do after you see the guts?
I either throw them in a cluttered drawer or try to put it back together again.
Yeah? Have you ever put something all the way back together and have it still work?
Yes, I have.
Yeah? Good.
Though I do have, bits of an old telephone I ripped apart.
There are bits of a lot of things over there that, you've taken apart that are just pieces in a drawer. So what's gonna happen with all those things?
They're probably going to sit there until I figure out what to do with them.
Okay. I remember almost any time something in the house breaks down and it looks like it's not going to be usable anymore, you're going to ask whether you can take it apart.
Yes.
And this is good. I remember one thing you asked about once. Do you remember the time when this is going to sound really dated now, our VHS tape rewinder broke? Remember that? It wouldn't work anymore?
No, I remember using it. You push it, you put the tape in, and then you push it down, and it makes this really cool whirring sound.
Yeah, and it rewinds the tapes for you. Some people would question whether this invention was ever really necessary, because, of course, the VCR itself would rewind the tape. But the makers of these rewinders claimed that you could save the wear and tear on your VCR if you'd use this separate device to rewind the tapes. Anyway, we're getting a little bit off track there, but ours broke at one point, and you wanted to take it apart, and I said, that's fine, so you took it apart, and what we found in there, do you remember what we found when we took it apart?
I believe we found a broken belt, which we fixed, and it started working again.
Yeah, once we found what the problem was, you open it up, and you can find out what the problem is sometimes, and so we saw that the belt was broken, and in Lafayette, Louisiana, we have maybe the best belt store in the whole world, and I'm not exaggerating. It's called The Belt Store, and they have a website online, and I'll put a link in the show notes to it. But they serve customers all over the entire world, they've got a map up on the wall in there. Have you been there with me?
I think I was there once. I got this little mini calendar, but I can't remember what it looks like. Though I believe they have belts, like really, really big belts for like tractors and stuff.
Yeah, they're good.
Or belts. Not tractors, well, tanks and stuff.
Well, all kinds of oil field equipment, like anything that requires a belt, they've got a belt for it. And that's why they serve customers all over the world. It's a very unusual store. Grandpa, when he comes to visit us, he'll bring a list of belts that he needs to buy for the various tools he has. And they always have them at really good prices. But anyway, so we took the broken belt to the belt store. And this lady that works there at the counter put it on her little measuring device. And I would say in under 60 seconds had a replacement belt in our hands that cost maybe $3. And so we bought it and took it home, put it back together, and the thing worked again.
But alas, I was kind of disappointed that I didn't get to rip it apart.
Oh, well, there are other things that you did get to rip apart.
Yes, many things.
So, taking things apart, that's one of the fundamental ways to become a hacker, right?
Yes. And for those of you out there with little hackerlings, it is a great way to get them into physical hacking.
Yeah. Yeah, if you've got kids and you need to keep them busy and want to get them interested in this kind of thing, just go to a yard sale and buy an old VCR or something. And
There's nothing really quite like taking a circuit board out of something you just bought for about $3.
Yeah, it's fun. Even so, you know, when I bought my new laptop a year ago, I don't think I'd had it for more than 3 hours before I had taken the keyboard off just to figure out how I could, like, because I wanted to see what was under there. And so I just can't help myself sometimes. I've got a shirt from ThinkGeek that's, what does my shirt say?
I avoid warranties. Yeah. And below it, there are a series of screws that they use to keep hackers out.
Yeah, they've got the images of all the various security screws that companies have tried to use to keep hackers from opening up stuff. But get the right specialized tool set and you can get past that stuff. So, why don't you tell the audience what operating system you run on your laptop?
I run Linux, and I run Crunchbang Linux, and I really don't like Windows.
You don't like Windows? How come?
Because it's flooded with viruses, and honestly, it doesn't work as well as Crunchbang does.
Yeah. We do have, you've got a couple of laptops, right? And one of them has a Windows partition. What's it good for?
Playing video games, and that's about it.
Yeah. He's got an old Toshiba that dual boots Crunchbang and XP. And the XP partition is perfect for playing these old PC games that we'll pick up at yard sales or the thrift store or something like that. But his main machine is a Dell XPS 1220 or something like that that runs just Crunchbang. So, do you find Linux easier than Windows, or harder, or what?
Well, I'm not used to Windows, as I've never really run it. So, it's really hard to say whether it's easier or not.
Mm-hmm. I've often thought that, you know, people will sometimes say that they can't run Linux because it's too hard. But kids, you and your sister, the only computers you've ever had have run Linux, and so you don't really get used to one thing and then have to learn a new thing. And so for you guys, it's easy. And I remember one thing that one day we really made your eyes light up. And too. Oops, I'll have to delete that. If I accidentally slip and say my kids' names, I'm going to be using a funny sound to cover over that. So that will explain the sound I just used to cover up their real names. We're going to protect their identities here. But remember the time that we took both of your laptops and created different splash screens for the boot process? So instead of flashing the Crunchbang symbol, it flashed an image that you had made yourself?
Yes, that was really very fun. And I keep forgetting to ask if we can do it on my new laptop.
We can, for sure. What did you use to make the image? Do you remember?
I used GIMP.
GIMP, all right. Yeah, my kids know how to use the GIMP. Both of them. How old are you?
I am 12.
Yeah, you're 12. Your sister's 9. And this was probably a year or two ago. So they've been using GIMP since 7, 8, 9 years old, and can do some basic stuff with it. I really like it. But what we did was we went into the Plymouth, I don't know, what is this thing called? A boot manager or something? But there's a graphical thing that you can use to cover up all of the terminal output when you're booting. And on the default installation of Crunch Bang, I think it just flashed, it kind of pulsed on a crunch and a bang, the hash and the exclamation point. And the kids asked, is there any way that we can make it do something else? And I said, well, let's see. So I read around a little bit and found that if you go into the Plymouth directories, I think, you can find the boot up themes in there. And what we did was just copied one and then hacked it to use a different image. And so each of my kids had a personalized boot up theme. And they loved that. When they booted up, they saw their image instead of some other. That's the kind of thing, I don't think it's even possible with Windows. So that was one of those moments, kind of a teaching moments about the greatness of open source stuff, that you can get in there and change stuff around to suit yourself. Now, you also spent a little bit of time, not so much lately, but you were for a while working on learning some Python, right?
Yes.
How did that go for you? What was that like?
It was a while back, but, I couldn't really do so much advanced stuff as I wanted to, so I stopped doing it. But recently, I've come back and started working with Blather, which my dad has talked about in an earlier episode.
Yeah. So, who is it that created Blather? The great?
Jezra.
Jezra's name is revered in this household. Yeah. So, yeah. So, what kinds of things do you, oh, by the way, if you're curious, what we did for him to work on Python, and I actually worked on it with him too, because I didn't know any Python. All of my scripting has been in Bash. We used a book called, what is that book called? Invent Your Own Computer Games with Python.
Second edition.
Yeah, Invent Your Own Computer Games with Python by, what is his name? Al Swigert. And it's pretty cool. It's a book that you can actually read for free online, but we ordered a copy in paper format and then went to the website and downloaded some of the scripts that he gives. And we made it through a few of the games, and it was pretty fun. One of my proudest moments in this whole process, though, was when, like, one morning you got up and just wrote out on a piece of paper essentially a Python program. Do you remember this? Do you remember what your program was?
Oh, yeah. At that time, I was into a series called Redwall, and I created a Redwall game.
Mm.
A very simple Redwall game, but still a Redwall game.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that you had to choose a cabinet, mm-hmm. and depending on which cabinet you chose, it randomly selected an ingredient, and though I never finished it, you're supposed to collect all the ingredients.
Uh-huh. So we learned a little bit about arrays of objects that would be chosen, and so I'm probably going to use the wrong terminology here. But, you know, that actually wasn't the one I was thinking of. Do you remember you got up one morning and made a timer? Do you remember that? That would count down?
Oh, yes.
What was that about?
I'm not really sure, but I made a timer. So I was just thinking that it would be useful.
Yeah. So what he did was he wrote out on a piece of paper Python code that he thought would make a timer that would count down, I think, just from 60 to 0, and then do something at the end of that time. So it would count off 60 seconds or something?
Yes, I believe it would count down an input time and then beep.
Okay, so the user could input the time you wanted.
Yes.
So it would prompt you for input, and you would type in how many seconds or minutes. I can't remember.
I believe it was minutes.
Okay, but what was so impressive was that the code that he wrote out, I took a look at it, and it looked pretty good, and I said, well, why don't you type this up in your text editor? And so he did it, and with very minor fixes and modifications, it worked, like almost on the first try. It was really good programming. So I was really proud of you for that. That was cool. And what did we end up doing at the end of the time? Did it play a sound or flash the screen or something. I don't remember.
I believe we had it play a beep sound.
Yeah, some kind of audio file. We made it play an audio file. And, yeah, that was pretty cool. So what kinds of things do you do with Blather? It's been a couple weeks since you've fooled around with that, but I remember for a while there, you were scripting and making it do stuff. What do you like to do with Blather?
I've made it do several basic things. For example, I've written out a script that says, email Jezra. It opens Thunderbird and enters in Jezra's email for me.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So with one command, email Jezra, it'll open it up, all ready to type in the subject line. And I don't know, have you used that very much? I know you used it at least once.
Yes, I have used it at least once, but most of the time I don't really have a reason to email Jezra, so I don't really use it that often.
Yeah, I understand. So what other commands have you come up with for Blather?
I've come up with the basic open terminal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Except I did run into a problem. I put in the command to open terminal. Turns out you should put in open terminator.
Yeah.
Because
that's the terminal emulator that you have installed. You could, if you wanted to be able to say open terminal, you could make a symlink, which is like an alias in the program directory that will link to Terminator. And of course, you could also, if you say open terminal, that can be your voice command, but then of course in your executed command that Blather runs, just make sure you put Terminator instead of terminal. Is that what you ended up doing?
Yes, that is what I ended up doing.
Ah, okay, so you're smarter than I am then. You figured that out.
And also, I worked with the physical Blather window. I made it so that it closes Blather and then opens a new window, and then I modified it so it closes Blather, runs new corpus .shush.
Yeah, the shell script new corpus. Yeah, that's the one that will update the language files, yes.
And then reopens Blather, so you can use the new command you just put in.
It's so funny that you're saying Blather like that, because that's what I always say. Because why do we say Blather instead of Blather?
Our microphones happen to have a quirk. When we say Blather, they think we're saying bladder.
Yeah, I think it's not even the microphone so much as the speech recognition engine, the Sphinx thing. It has a hard time distinguishing between the TH and the D. And so I've just by default now say bladder and make it recognize that instead of blather.
As do I.
Yeah, it makes sense. You're the one who came up with the idea for the, you know, I'm always restarting Blather because it needs to run the language updater script. And it seems like you're the one who said, Dad, why don't you just make one of the commands, shut it down, run the script, and then restart it instead of having to say, shut it down, then run the script, then say restart. You know, you helped me automate it and make it more efficient, so thanks for that, man.
Well, actually, I thought I put it together.
Yeah. You probably did, and then I copied you.
Yes, you did.
Man, listen to him.
I gotta copyright the... I should start copywriting these things.
Man, but that's not in the Linux way. The free software way is just to share it and not worry so much about who gets credit, although okay. You should get credit. So another thing that I wanted to talk to you about that seems like it would be really of great interest to hackers is this hobby that you took up a couple years ago and didn't get to do so much this last year, but really seemed to want to, the blacksmithing. How in the world did you get started as a kid doing blacksmithing?
Well, I went to...
Festival Acadienne?
Yeah. Yes. I went to a festival, and I saw a blacksmith there, and I thought it looked cool. So, I applied for lessons,
mm-hmm.
and he said yes. We got started that winter, as it was very, very hot then.
Mm-hmm.
And I've made several things. A nail, which I believe some of the listeners listeners have.
Well, NY Bill has one of your nails. Yeah, yeah. We sent one to him. So why does he have you make nails? What's the reasoning behind making nails? I've noticed that you made a lot of those.
It's very basic. And it kind of is a warm up.
Right.
You have to make a make a couple nails before you start the lesson.
So how do you make a nail?
It's pretty easy. You heat up one end of a long metal strip, and then you hammer it down, and then you flatten it out on one, and then you hammer on one side a couple times, flip it and hammer on the other side, and basically draw it out until it is at a point. If you've ever seen a blacksmith nail, you can see what I'm talking about.
We'll put a picture of one in the show notes of a couple of your blacksmithing creations. How's that sound?
Great.
Yeah, so you've made numerous nails. You also made a candle holder, a couple of different kinds of candle holders.
Actually just one kind of candle holder. I guess the chandelier would count.
Well, that chandelier thing I would call a candle holder. But then the candle holder that's got the curly thing at the bottom and then the point sticking up to hold the candle, that thing is awesome. And what else did you make? A meat turner for grilling steaks and stuff.
And then at my request, I designed and built a pancake flipper. Though, alas, we cannot use it because it's made out of metal and it would scrape the bottom of the pan.
Oh, yeah. That's too bad. But it's beautiful.
It has kind of a swirly heart-shaped design, and we'll put in a picture.
Yeah, we can put a picture of that, too. Maybe what we'll do is set up a gallery of your stuff on my pictures site and then link to the whole gallery. So what's the most fun thing about blacksmithing?
It's really an art form, and I just seem to have a way with metal. Mm-hmm. For some reason, and I just seem to have a way with it, and because I have a way with it, I enjoy it more than other art forms.
It's nothing to do with getting to hold burning, glowing, hot metal.
And it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that once it's cooled down enough, you can stick it in water and see all the steam rise up.
Yeah, what's that called?
Quenching it.
Quenching, yeah. When you've got the thing, you're ready, you're done hammering it out, it's glowing hot, you can stick it right in the water and go... Whoosh! That's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Though I did think it would make a little more steam.
Maybe if you got a really big piece, it'll make a lot of steam.
Well, if it was glowing, I think it would make more steam.
Yeah, blacksmithing is pretty awesome, and not many kids do it. There's that one kid, Mr. Delahousie, has one protege who's now 17 or 18 years old, who's really good also. And he started when he was 9, like you.
Well, actually, I started at 10.
You were 10, yeah. Anyway, okay, so anything else to say about blacksmithing?
No, not really.
No? Okay. So you've got something in your hand there that you seemed keen to talk about. What is that?
First, can I get started about about another form of hacking?
Yeah, go for it.
Well,
what's on your mind?
I also have another hacking hobby, designing things. Theoretically, of course, as I don't have the money for holo projectors and special chemicals.
Hold up, what's a holo projector?
A projection that doesn't need a surface, to go upon.
So it's like a hologram, like in Star Wars, when Princess Leia appears out of R2-D2 and says, "Help us, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope," like that?
A little bit. It's a bit more like the one in WALL-E, where it is a 2D image, I believe.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead. So you don't have the money for hologram projector thingies and...
So, I just make theoretical designs. And I am holding a visual aid, which I will post a picture of. Mm-hmm. And as a And as I do not have the materials to put together a real visual aid, I have made this one out of Lego pieces.
Legos. Yeah, hackers love Legos. Why do you think that is?
Because they're designed to be hacked.
That's right. Take them apart, put them back together. Yeah, so he has here a device that has four arm-looking things that kind of fold up and go towards the center. It's an octagon shape with a circular thing in the center. So what is this thing?
It is a new breed of phone.
It doesn't look like a phone.
That is because it is entirely new and has entirely different needs. Mm-hmm. As instead of using a touchscreen, it uses depth sensors and overlaid holograms.
You lost me. Overlaid holograms, what's that?
As I told you, most holograms are 2D images. And if you create a picture with something clear, with clear edges and something in the middle, and you get about 100 of those, and you put them on top of each other, mm-hmm. you can make an image.
Okay.
A 3D image. So, basically, the same thing happens. There are a whole bunch of holoprojectors on these arms,
mm-hmm.
and they project at angles, and they overlap to create a 3D image.
Awesome.
And the depth sensors in the middle use can tell, depending on which depth sensor detects you, it can see which direction you're coming from and how far away you are, and therefore it can find out how hard you're pressing by mm-hmm. how close you are and where you are by where your finger it mm-hmm. by which one is picking you up.
So you're saying that you control the thing by moving your hand around it?
Yes, like, it's kind of like a touch screen without the touch.
Without the touch, okay. Boy, do you remember when we were at the little, museum kind of, but the little science activity center in Tennessee where Grandma and Grandpa live, and we played with the theremin? Do you remember the theremin? It's a musical instrument that's got two metal things, one of which sticks up, and you play it by moving your hands closer and farther away?
No, I don't remember that, but I have read about it. Apparently, mm-hmm. it is like the only musical instrument that can be operated without physically touching it.
Yeah, you don't touch it at all. One thing controls the amplitude, or the volume, and the other controls the frequency, the pitch. And so you move your hands to control the frequency and amplitude. And it sounds like you've got a similar kind of deal going here. You never touch it, but you're able to control it anyway.
Yes, it is a lot like that, except instead of changing pitch and volume, it is connected with mouse clicks and dragging things and making images bigger. And it is overlaid with the hologram setup I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a lot like that, except you can actually see what you're supposedly touching.
So theoretically then, how do you make a call with something like this?
Basically the same way you would make a call on a touchscreen phone, even though it doesn't have any call buttons.
Mm-hmm.
You go into, it projects buttons, and you mm-hmm. just touch the projections, and it dials the number.
So, it seems like, with something like this, that's such a radical departure, maybe we can even get rid of the whole button paradigm. Maybe there's no need for buttons anymore. Maybe you can just think, call mom, and it'll know. And then suddenly a hologram of your mom will appear, talking to you. What do you think?
Well, I'm not really sure how to get past that annoying skull thing, so I'm not really sure
get into the skull.
So I'm not really sure how to get visual images without intensive surgery.
Oh, okay.
They have actually started. I have seen a video where someone moves a mouse around with their brain, mm-hmm. but it looks very uncomfortable as they have something plugged into the top of their skull.
Yikes. Yeah, we haven't hacked into the brain. yet. Although, on our trip to New York a couple weeks ago, you got to do a virtual open heart surgery, right? Tell us about that. How was that?
It was very interesting, though it wasn't really as realistic as I thought it would be.
Where was this, by the way?
This was in New York.
This is New York City at Sony Wonders, right? Is that what it's called?
Yes, Sony Wonders Technology Lab.
Yeah. How was that? Did you like it?
Yes, it was amazing. Hold on a sec. I have a list of the things that were there.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Yeah, so while my son's sister and I were at the Metropolitan Museum of Art checking out the masterworks by Vermeer and Van Gogh and Monet and all those kinds of things, my son here went with his mom over to Sony Wonders Technology Lab and checked out stuff there. He decided that on this trip he wanted to see some kind of new stuff and not look at a bunch of old stuff in a museum type setting. So they found that. It sounds like a pretty cool place. I did not get to see it. And it's free. The Sony Wonders Technology Lab is free, but you do have to have tickets or some kind of verification code or something. You have to make arrangements in advance. You can't just show up and hope to get in. But his mom found it and made arrangements for them to go on that day, and they went and had a good time. So now he's got the paper. What all did you do there?
We had SWTL diagram, whatever that is. I can't really remember.
SWTL. If only we had an IRC channel with listeners live commenting upon this, somebody might know that. But that's okay. Go ahead. What else?
Signal stations, mm-hmm. where it teaches you about how signals are transmitted, mm-hmm. and you actually got to transmit a picture of yourself onto a giant screen in the corner.
Crazy.
And then there's something called Anytime, Anywhere, and after that, nanotechnology, mm-hmm. which didn't really have anything to do with technology, more just nano.
So what about nano?
It explained what nano means, which is kind of boring. And
okay, that's fine. So what else?
After that was virtual surgery, which we already talked mm-hmm. about, and after that we programmed a robot, which was kind of a disappointment, as it didn't really work out.
Don't. And this is the kind of thing that happens when you're experimenting. Sometimes it just doesn't work. You have to try again.
And after that, we built a racing game, though that didn't really work out either, as I couldn't do the controls properly.
Oh, dear. But you had fun anyway?
Well, I kept crashing the car, so... Yeah.
Well, that's pretty fun.
Yeah, but not if you can't control the car to crash it.
Yeah. So what else?
Then I did the animation studio.
Hmm.
I got to look in on how animation works.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, there were other things that I did not do. There was this dance motion capture thing.
Is that one of those things where you wear a suit that's got little sensors all over it or something?
About the same thing, except without the suit.
Oh, good.
After that, there was this HTV studio.
HDTV? Yeah.
HDTV studio.
Mm-hmm.
After that, the movie maker. And something called In the Game, meaning I got to go and play Lego Batman on a PlayStation.
On a PlayStation?
Yes. It is...
Oh, that's a Sony product, of course. Yes. Yeah, so it's not really surprising that they would have a PlayStation. It is Sony Wonders, after all. What else? Music mixer? Is that what that says?
Yes, and then music mixer, which I saw was not available some reason or another.
So the only part of this that I actually heard about after you were done was the surgery. So was that... what did you do that on? Was there like a touch screen or something? Or how did that work?
There was this little ball thing on connector thingy majiggers. Mm-hmm. and you moved it around, pressing in and pulling out, pushing it forward and all these other directions. It was like a 3D joystick, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really work out too well. Apparently it's a very new technology and they haven't quite perfected it. But I managed to cut through the rib cage properly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't really get to enjoy it as I just was moving around at that point. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah. And after that, I went in and cut a slit in the heart to stop it beating so that I could perform surgery. And after I'd cut it open, I put a tube in, which I had the person on the computer thing do, as I could not do that.
Okay.
And after I did that, the heart stopped beating, and I was able to go in and cut something else open.
Okay.
And then I don't think I cut anything open. I put a patch on something and then tried to sew it, which didn't really work out either.
But somehow your patient survived, correct?
Yes. By some miracle, my patient survived.
I wonder if they actually have any patients die in that.
I don't think so.
Virtual surgery. That would just be too disheartening for the kids.
I'm sorry, your patient died.
That's too bad. I want to try again. Would you recommend that place for people who've got kids about your age?
Yes, I would.
Interested in science and technology.
And they actually had holograms there, though they were in boxes, and I couldn't really see them properly. And they talked about new technology. Apparently, they've invented biofuel batteries that you can, like, pour sports drink in and use it to power a fan or something.
Crazy. You know, I just heard a story on NPR News a couple days ago, maybe last week sometime, about some researchers who are building batteries out of wood. That sounds like a biofuel of some sort as well.
Yes, it would work as a biofuel.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Well, do you have... I wanted to ask you one more thing. You are a huge reader, and you've been reading, thousands and thousands of pages of books. So do you have any summer reading recommendations for kids of our HPR audience who are into science, technology, fantasy, adventure, that kind of thing?
So many. The Temerar Cycle, which is for adults, so you should probably read aloud to them and filter out the unsavory parts.
There's some swearing in it, but that might not matter to some people. You're 12, and we trust you with it. You hear much worse at school, I think. So that's the Temeraire series. What is that about? Donkeys or something?
It is set in the Napoleonic Wars.
So it's not about donkeys.
No, it's not about donkeys.
I'm just being silly.
And the plot is that this sea captain, William Lawrence, is on an English vessel, and he's going around, and he finds this, and he captures this French ship, and he opens up the cargo hold, and he finds a secret door in the cargo hold, and he finds an egg, a dragon egg inside. And as dragons are very valuable, he has to have it harnessed, meaning someone has to put a harness on it and gain ownership of it. And as it is a dragon, the person who harnesses it has to live away from civilization, and they don't really get much luck with women because they're...
they're stuck with a dragon for the rest of their life.
Yes. So, big downside, okay. But the dragon, who he names Temerar, comes out really cute, and my sister... who cannot read it because of the swearing and such. My parents are reading it aloud to her and filtering out the swearing and stuff.
And she likes it too.
She really enjoys it, and she thinks Timur is very cute.
Yeah. All right. So we've got a reading recommendation. We've got anything else on your mind before we call it a day here?
About 500 other reading recommendations.
Ah, well, you have to start your own podcast for the reading recommendations. You'd be good at that, because you read so many things and have all kinds of opinions about them. So, anyway, thank you so much for chatting with me here. Son, I will not say your name here. All right, maybe I should say it so I can bleep it out later.
Okay. How about we say a fake name just in case it doesn't bleep out properly?
Okay. Thanks a lot. Nice chatting with you. And maybe we'll do it some other time if we get a good topic here on HPR. You want to say bye to our listeners?
Bye.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.